And this is something that I've learned throughout all these years of like my careers, like working at different companies with different goals, with different design cultures, really helps you to see all these processes. And I think what's important, it's for people to have this self-awareness and think, okay, what is my passion? What drives me? What kind of projects do I really like to work on? Where are my strengths? Like, where are my weaknesses? You know, like, and like when did I have most fun working on a project? Was it a project that I got to do a lot of user research and then I was talking to a lot of people? Or was it when I was, you know, pushing pixels and creating UI?
Hola and welcome to episode 10 of Latinx's Who Design. I am your host, Michelle Ferreira, a Brazilian designer living in Sydney, Australia. Thank you for listening. Our goal is to highlight Latinx's designers from all backgrounds, shapes, colors, and sizes, sharing their stories and struggles to inspire the next generation of designers. Although we had some issues with Zoom this time around, I hope you can still enjoy this week's interview. I had the pleasure of chatting with Andrea Pacheco. Andrea Pacheco, as she likes to think, is a citizen of the world. Originally from Brazil, she spent 4 years in Amsterdam and then moved to London 1.5 years ago. Having designed for Booking.com, TransferWise, and digital agencies such as RGA and Razorfish, she's now working at Apple in the international design team, helping to transform designed in California to designed in Apple. She likes to think that she lives in a world of infinite possibilities and prefers to see things not as they are, but as they could be, inspiring others to see the spark of potential in everything. In her own words, she suffers for her art, but ice cream makes up for it. And now, Andrea Pacheco. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing good. What about you?
I'm good, thanks.
Hey, Andrea, where are you calling us from right now?
So right now I'm based in the UK. I'm living in London, and more precisely East London. So shout out to everyone who lives in East London. And yeah, that's where I am right now.
Awesome. How do you like it? How is England for you?
It's good. Well, I'm from Brazil, as you know, so the weather is very difficult. I'm proud to be someone that always find it very easy to adapt to the weathers, but London has really got on me. Like, I don't know why, but winter here, it's very hard. Like, I came from Amsterdam right now. Before London, I was in the Netherlands for 4 years. So I felt like I was very used to the wind and the cold weather, but the UK is really tough, man. It's not easy. But let's see, there's a lot of things that make up to it. So far it has been a really good experience, even though I moved to the UK in the beginning of the lockdown. So yeah.
How has the lockdown been in London? That's an interesting situation, moving in the middle of lockdown.
Yeah. So when I moved to London, okay, so a little bit of background story here. So I moved from Amsterdam to London to work at TransferWise. And when I got here, I got to go to the office for 2 weeks before the lockdown started. So I had this onboarding person at TransferWise, which was great. But the rest of my experience within TransferWise was fully remote. And then when I joined Apple, it was fully remote as well. So my onboarding at Apple was 100% remote. And we have been remote so far, which is almost a year. So I joke to say that I know all the parks in London because I have a dog, and that's like about it. Like, that's as far as I get to experience the Londoner life. But yeah, the city is amazing. It's very urban. It's something that I was missing because I was living in São Paulo when I was in Brazil. So I really like this cosmopolitan atmosphere. And I was missing that in Amsterdam.
Nice, nice. Oh my gosh, that was a lot. You lived in São Paulo, you've lived in Amsterdam, and you're working for Apple. Let's start from there. Let's start from Apple right now. So, what do you do at Apple?
Okay, so at Apple right now, I am a product designer and I'm working on a team called International Product Design Team. And it's a team based in London. It's a product design team based in London, which is quite interesting because usually most of the teams are based in California. And what we do is that we try to transform the design in California to design in Apple. So what that means that we look to improve our experiences for all of our services, so they are not so US centric, and we can like shape their experiences to speak more to users everywhere in all of the markets. So one example that I like to give is like the way people drive in, one country is different from how people drive in the other country. The way people watch TV is different from country to country. The way people listen to music, the way people, I don't know, like cook or everything changes. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that our products, they are the best for people where they are. And for that, we really need to learn about the culture differences and empathize with them and think about all of the use cases possible that might affect that experience so we can really take it to the next level. So I think it's a lot of like democratizing design and making sure that design speaks to everyone, not just small. Or just a certain group of people that are privileged because, they have the best internet connection, they have 5G or something like this. So yeah, I think that's a little bit it.
I like it. I like it. So you do that at Apple, and would you mind telling me, so what does your week look like as a product designer on the international team at Apple?
Well, let's see. Right now we are fully remote, so we try to collaborate as much as possible. Of course, there's a lot of VC calls all the time. So, we make sure we are up to date with what each one is doing within the team. But I guess the whole week it's about trying to get as much as immersed on the user problems as possible. And then, looking at the use cases that we're trying to solve, there's a lot of design critiques, there's a lot of feedback sharing. And we try to share the work that it's been doing with each other and with the other studios as well. So yeah, it's pretty fun actually, because there's a lot of freedom to design what the best experience could be like and what they should be. I think that's one of the things that Apple is very known for, and this is like what makes so special to work there, because you have this freedom to do the best work that you can. And yeah, it's very collaborative, I would say, the work that we do. Yeah.
Nice. That's pretty cool. So we're gonna go all the way back to the beginning, and we're gonna talk about where you started. So you mentioned you're from Brazil. Are you originally from São Paulo?
No, and I'm very proud to say that I'm from a very small town in the Amazon area up in the north called Macapá. I don't know if you heard about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very, very small town, and for some reason, I was this very artsy kid, growing up in this very like low-tech city. And I fell in love with art and colors and like creativity, and that drove me to move to bigger cities and purchase like better opportunities for myself.
Got it. So really cool. So I'm a pop represent. So
So you're from that small city. You started because of your love of arts and color, like you said. Which city did you move to?
Okay, so the story is pretty much, as I told you, I was born in this very small city, and for some reason I was very artsy and very like creative and so on. And then my family and I, we moved to the northeast of Brazil, which is still like very like small city and not so much access to big agencies or big companies and so on, because that wasn't the market for this in Brazil. So when the time came for me to go to college, I didn't want to do any of the conventional like choices, which was like law school or med school, whatever. I really wanted to do something that involves art and communication. I wanted to be a journalist, actually. When I was a kid, I used to play that I was this anchor for like a news television show. So I was really considering like TV, radio, journalism, but I ended up choosing advertising. And because it was a mix of communication, fashion, arts, and pop culture, which was something that I really relate to. And that's how it started, actually. I started to do advertising, and at the same time, for some reason that I don't remember, I took a course on graphic design, and that course changed everything for me. I had this amazing professor that taught me how to build up this creative thinking and how to challenge everything that you see. So for example, if you see, you know, a product or an illustration or anything that you think, oh my gosh, this is so cool, like have this way of thinking that is like, how did this person got to build this? Like, what was their thought process like? And that thought process really inspired me to become an art director. So that's how I started, pretty much. So from there, I started to work at some advertisement agencies as an art director, well, as a trainee art director and so on. And the funny story is that I really sucked at handcraft. So, and I don't know if you guys have experience on like ad agencies, but there's a lot of offline printing going on. So you really need to create mockups for folders and magazines and things like this. And I was really bad at it. I was really, really bad. And then one day I saw this digital art director. He was working there during lunchtime, and he was building a website. And I remember approaching him and saying, hey, how do you create a website? Like, what is this? How do you go about it? Like, I had no idea. For me, that was the most complicated thing in earth. And then that's how I got, I got to the front door of this digital world. And it was great because in digital, you can repair it and you can always take your like work to the next level. And I really like the fact that you can always iterate and stuff. So yeah, so that's pretty much how I started to fall in love with digital design. So eventually I made this transition from art direction to UI design. And I was working as a UI designer at some digital companies there in Brazil. And at some point I realized that I wanted to have more product ownership, and I started to see a lot of information architectures having that ownership that I wanted, because I didn't want to just, you know, apply the skin and the colors and the style to the wireframes and stuff. And that's when I also had another twist in my career, and I started to dive in into UX design. So I started to partner with a friend of mine in São Paulo. He had like an iOS development studio, and I started to do a lot of freelance work for him for free, which is something that I encourage a lot of people to do, because I didn't have a portfolio back then, right, for UX design. So I started to work for free for him just to get this experience, have some like work to showcase on my portfolio. And then eventually I got myself a job as a UX designer. And I think from there, everything like was pretty like fluid, pretty smooth. From UX designer, I got to work at a product company and then product design and so on. But the great thing I think when I look back is the amount of focus that I apply to my career. This is something that I see a lot of people struggling with this. And since I went to college, I remember sitting in my room and getting like a piece of pen and paper and making it myself like a plan, like where do I want to be in the next 5 years? And I literally wrote down all the companies that I wanted to work at in order to get to my number one company. And that's how I went about my career. I think I had a lot of focus. There was a lot of planning at like every step that I took was very well thought. And all the companies that I worked for, I worked there for a reason because I wanted to, you know, get to where I wanted to go. And I think this is something that I really try to tell to anyone who like it's a little bit lost in their career. They don't know what to do and they don't know how to get there. They want to work at company A, but then, you know, they want their leap to be from wherever they are to company A. And it's not like this in real life. You need to go through a lot of companies to get to where you want, to get the experience that you need. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of planning going on there. But I have to say I'm a Virgo, so I think that helps as well, because Virgos, they like to plan everything that they do.
Oh, that's so cool. And but you know, Virgo or not, it's quite interesting because I haven't had anyone talk about how focused they were. This sounded very focused, that you knew where you wanted to go and that you created a plan for it. Do you have any suggestions on how to figure that out, how to get to that plan, to the non-Virgos of the world?
Yeah. The way that I like to look at my career or any career, right? Like career growth, it's just like when you're building a product, and we know we are product designers, so we're pretty familiar with this, right? You have a goal that you want to achieve, and there are some processes that you need to go through to get there. There is an audience that you're trying to please, and the product in this case, it's yourself. So you need to make sure that this product that is yourself makes a great impact out there. So for me, how it worked was using the example of like ad agencies, right? When I started to plan my career, I really wanted to work at the best advertisement agents in the world. And so I did my research, found out which the companies were. And I realized that I wasn't in the city for that. Like I was in a very small city. So I realized, okay, for example, I'm just going to be more explicit about it. So I was in Brazil, and in Brazil, São Paulo is the city that, you know, has most numbers of amazing advertisement agencies. But I was in this very small city in the north of Brazil. And I thought, okay, I'm not ready to go to São Paulo yet. So maybe let's do a trial launch. Let's, you know, do that 10% release. So that's why I went to live in Curitiba, which is a city that is a little bit bigger than the city that I was. And it had this one big agency that is called JWT, that is very well known as well. And and my way of thinking was, okay, I have to go to this city. I have to get a job at this company so I can get the experience and the learnings so I can make a bigger move and then go to São Paulo. So I think you need to really strategize this. Like, I want to reach, you know, point A, but then to get there, I need to have, you know, I need to pass through all these smaller points. And one thing that I see is that a lot of people, they want to make this big move straight away. So they don't have much experience, or they don't have international experience, which is also something else. And they really want to make it on the first trial. And you really need to, you know, like go through smaller steps until you make that, until you have the experience to to make the move that you want. And talking about international experience, I think that's something interesting to say. When I first moved abroad to the Netherlands, someone told me something that really stood out to me, which is when you're senior in Brazil, just because you hold this title of I'm a senior product designer or a senior designer in Brazil or in your country, it doesn't mean that you're a senior level abroad. And don't take this as an offense, but it's because the amount of pressure and the way that the working style, it's completely different. So a lot of people, they think, okay, I have 10 years of experience, I'm going to move abroad and I'm going to be rocking it. And sometimes you have to start out really humble. And I think that's also something to consider. I hope that answers. I don't know.
That totally answers it. That's an amazing answer. Thank you for that. So again, we're going to unpack a lot of that. I'm going to go back a little bit, and talk about, so how do you use that? Cause you described a level of, planning. Again, you joked that you were a Virgo, but you described a level of planning that was very carefully, thought out of things that you needed to do, the steps you needed to do, small steps, not jumping ahead, not trying, like basically overextend your leg so you don't fall. So I saw a lot of intentionality. I saw a lot of planning. How do you use that?
A lot of intentionality. Yeah.
So I'm looking at that and trying to imagine how do you use that as your day-to-day work as a product designer? How do you reflect that same intentionality and planning into your designs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think intentionality is the key. I talk a lot about this. What is intentionality, right? It's like everything that you do, there needs to be a very clear reason behind it, why you're doing that. From presenting an idea, like from the storytelling that you're conveying, the things that you're saying, until the design choices that you make, the features that you decide to move forward with, like everything needs to be a very solid reason. And that reason depends, of course, on the way the company that you are work, or like the design values that you're, like the environment that you're in. But anyway, regardless of this, I think intentionality is the key. I see this as like the five whys, right? Like, why are you making this choice? Why are you saying this? And then why? And then you're going to get to the root of the problem. And so, yeah, for me right now, what matters the most is to really understand the people's pain points. That's where I spend most of my time. Most of my time that I'm working, I'm really trying to immerse myself on the use cases and on the people's problem, and really trying to understand where it comes from. And then, so when I start to design a puzzle to solve that problem, there's a lot of foundation to whatever design decision that I come to. Also, one thing that I guess it's important, like I was making this parallel with my career, is to have a very clear goal in mind of what you're trying to achieve. Because, just starting to do some research or exploration just for the sake of it without having a clear goal, it takes you to nowhere. So I think having a clear goal, it's very important, but not only having a clear goal, yourself. I think the whole team that you're working with, you guys need to be in the same page. And this is something that I've seen creating lots of confusion in the past, because sometimes you're working in the team, there's five more people, and each one of you have different concept of the goal. Sometimes, your peer, your colleague, they want to achieve A, you want to achieve B, or the other one wants to achieve a little bit of both. So I think it's very important to have very clear alignment between the team members, so you're all like looking at the same outcome. And something that can help with this is to have a very clear set of design principles. So I like to use a lot of like this framework of design principles to make sure that everyone agrees on the same outcome that we are looking at. And design principles, they can come from a combination of the company's design values with the user needs, for example, that you're trying to solve for. So yeah, I think like having a good shared set of goals with your team, it's very important. So you know how you want to get there, and thinking about, okay, for me to reach that goal, what are the steps that I need to take? And most importantly, what are the questions that I need to ask myself? Because I think the beginning of everything is like knowing what questions to make, because the questions are related to the goal somehow. So if I want to get there, how can I get this? How do I know this? And then you start to plan that journey ahead of you.
Awesome. This is really cool. Thank you for sharing all of that. So you were working in São Paulo, and of course you just mentioned all your planning and all your thought process. So how did you plan the move to the Netherlands? What drove that move? What was the goal or the intention that you had?
So I knew since I was since I was younger, I always knew that I wanted to live abroad for some reason that really inspired me. So I knew that I would make this move at some point. I wasn't planning that to be in 2015, which is when I moved to the Netherlands. I was hoping that it would be around 2017. But in 2015, Brazil, we had this huge economical crisis. And then I was working at a very big offline agency, and I was within the digital department, which was very small. It was a small part of it. So eventually it was the very first department that got affected by the crisis. So I wasn't employed, and then I was trying to find another job. And then I was like, okay, if I'm trying to find another job, why not try to find something abroad? And then eventually I got this opportunity in this startup in Amsterdam, and their product looked really great. It was so interesting. It was a video on-demand platform. So it's kind of like, long story short, it's kind of this Netflix product, but that you could use multiple devices at the same time, and then you can control the UI within, like, from any device that you want. So it was pretty cool for me. I'm someone that I like to work with new technology, and I like to work with very customer focused products. So I really like to think about crazy ideas and crazy interactions, and think about, you know, have fun with the work that I'm doing, like think about broader visions and broader user experiences. So for me, that was a great opportunity, like to work with this product that I got to design for TV, to big screens, to, you know, everything. And coming from a talent background, that for me was amazing. I was like, finally, I'm, you know, getting my hands to work with product design. So that was really nice.
Cool. Yeah, that's really awesome. And from there, since you were already in the Netherlands, you moved to booking.com. Am I correct? Is that the...
Yeah, so I was at this startup for 10 months, more or less. And it was, like I was saying, it was amazing, like getting to design for all these crazy devices. I was like having so much fun. But then eventually the startup didn't take over. They had some issues there. And then I had to make another move. And then I decided that I wanted to work at a larger company and to really design for millions of people and have the experience designing a design-driven like work style. I really wanted to understand the impact of the work that I was doing in people's lives and see this through data, through big data. So because I didn't have this experience back then, I was always working at very small scale. And I really wanted that experience. And then Booking was a great company. Like, they designed for millions of people. And it's a company that is proud to be very data-driven. And they have a really awesome, like, A-B test tool that is very well known. And for me, that was really attractive. Like, I really want to you know, get this expertise as well. And I guess that's the thing about, like, how I also see my career. I'm always trying to bite small, like, chunks of the food. You know, I'm always trying to get, like, different tastes of what it, being a designer could be. Like, I never settle just for being a visual designer or UI designer, or I'm only going to work with R&D projects, or I'm only going to work at conversion-driven projects or research projects. So I like to have the full spectrum, like, all the experiences that I can, so I can decide what I actually want to do. And being at this startup, I was doing a lot of R&D work, research and development. And that's why I thought, okay, maybe for my next step, I feel like I want to have more, I want to have more experience with business-driven decisions, with data-driven design, and understand more about A/B testing and so on. And Booking sounded like the best place to be at the time. And that's how I moved there. And yeah, I was there for 2 years and a half, I guess, I think.
Yeah, that's an amazing experience. And I like that you described the different design processes. That's a question I have for you. So what do you think is the design process that you would describe as your preferred version of a design process, or that you align the most with, or maybe that you enjoy the most to work with?
Mm-hmm. Whoa, that's a good question. The way that I see, there's so many different design processes out there, and I don't think there's a right or wrong, or one that is better than the other. I think there is one that is the most effective to the company that you're working with, the resources that you have with you, and the goal of the project, the products that you're building. So, for example, we were talking about, like, data-driven projects and so on. Like, if your goal is to optimize for conversion, for example, then there is a certain design process that is more, you know, in line with that, like, that focus more on experimentation, focus more on taking smaller steps and really reducing the risks of failure because you're trying to optimize. So you don't want to lose. You always want to be very assertive in every design decision that you make, because so for that, it's a design process that involves more experimentation, that involves more testing and so on. But if you're working on a project that is more about being, let's say, thinking more about the long-term impact, thinking more about, I don't want to say being innovative, but if your team or your company is willing to take risks because you're really trying to, you know, build this very robust user experience, and you really think about the user experience, and you can afford to take risks, then your design process changes, right? Because right now it's more about creating visionary work, creating visions, and creating robust interactions and user experience. And you spend more time thinking, like, taking your design to the next level and change and challenging every decision. Like, how can this be better? How can this be better? How can we make this more interesting? Or, you know, like how can this be, like, how can this really amaze people? Something like this. And then your design process changes way more, and you're more focused on creating visions than experimenting. So I think there are different design processes, and this is something that I've learned throughout all these years, my career is, like, working at different companies with different goals, with different design cultures, really helps you to see all these processes. And I think what's important it's for people to have this self-awareness and think, okay, what is my passion? What drives me? What kind of projects do I really like to work on? Where are my strengths? Like, where are my weaknesses? When did I have most fun working on a project? Was it a project that I got to do a lot of user research and then I was talking to a lot of people? Or was it when I was, pushing pixels and creating UI and thinking about the style? Or was it when I was coding, or when I was thinking about the business impact of something and aligning with stakeholders and pitching? So you really need to understand what are the things that makes you happy as a designer. And from that, you can start to see, okay, maybe my perfect design process is the one that I got to do this, 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 and that. And then from that point, you can start to think, okay, what are the companies or what are the type of products that really have this design process as well, right? So, and then you can plan your career and then work at a place that will really makes you happy. And because I think like different products, they have different goals. As I was saying, they have different processes as well. So this is something that the moment that I understood what I wanted to do and what are the things that I really like to work on, like life becomes much easier because you know how to drive your efforts.
100%. This was great. So you... have you figured out the design style or the design culture that you like?
Not 100%, but I do know what I don't like. And I think this is very important. This is something that I think the self-awareness, it's one of the things that I try to do. I'm someone that I'm very open with my team and with my managers, and I always like to provide them like a clear way to give me feedback. And I'm always very like transparent about the things that makes me happy or the things that I don't like to do as well. So I'm not afraid to, walk up to someone that I work with or my manager or whatever and say, hey, I was working on this project and I didn't enjoy doing this and that. So how can we optimize for the next project, I can do what I want? Because what people don't understand is when you do what you actually like, what you're passionate about, you really have more impact there because you have more passion, you have, you really go for it. So that's what I think a great manager does. Like they really see, okay, this person, what are their strengths and passions? So I can allocate them to work on this certain kind of project because I know they will thrive there. They will drive the project. They will do everything because they're very passionate. So I think it's very important as well, like for managers to see that in you, but also you as a designer, be very clear about this. I had moments that I felt very insecure about open up to my manager about what are the things that I like to do and I dislike. We really need to be transparent. It's the only way that we will, progress progress in our careers and become better designers. Like, hey, I'm someone that I'm very passionate about research. I'm very passionate about business and I'm very passionate about this. Can you, how can we work and how can you allocate me to a project that I can thrive in those areas so I can bring more impact to you as well? I forgot your question, by the way. I think I went in a totally different direction.
No, you didn't. It's really just wanting to know, your passion. I actually have a direct question for that, which is, you've been working with design for a long time and in different countries, different companies, all of that. So you told me what inspired you to get started with design, but what inspires you to stay in design and working in tech today?
That's a good question. Nice. Kudos to you. What inspires me? Well, I love people and I'm a very people person. I love to work with people. In fact, being in this lockdown situation, like working remotely has been very, like, it has been very challenging for me, because I am someone that I get my energy from being around people, and I love to, like, hear people's thoughts and so on. And I think this is one of the things that makes me still, like, work in design and work in tech, is because you're always surrounded by great people with great ideas, and people want to build stuff. And I love this sense of team, like this, you know, like this sense of, hey, let's build something, let's create something that is awesome, let's create something that's cool. And then everyone will, you know, be super happy about it. And I'm very passionate about having a passionate team. This is something that, for me, working with people that are very passionate about what they're doing, it's like the best thing ever. And also the opposite, right? When you work with someone that's kind of like, yeah, whatever, it's so sad, man. It's like not the best feeling. So I think what keeps me going is being surrounded with amazing creative people and building products that are really, really like, mind-blowing. I don't want to say mind-blowing, but I really like to work on products that people will have an amazing experience. You know, people will say, hey, wow, this is great. Like, technology is great. Because I feel like that's the way that I see design, and that's a little bit controversial, but I don't care. The way that I see design, I think they are two outcomes of like a design work. You can either be improving something. So you're working on a user problem. So you just want to fix that problem. You're trying to improve that tool or whatever. Or you can try to look out for new opportunities and create something new. So I think there are two ways of working. Like we were talking about design processes. You're either trying to solve problems and be a problem solver, which is totally fine. It's great because I feel like there's so much things that we need to fix out there. But you could also be spending time trying to think about new experiences and how you can create something new, or how can you challenge the status quo of your product and think about what the next like phase of this could be. And that's where I like to work the most. I think like that's one thing that keeps me thriving, is to always be challenging the status quo and be like, okay, we have something that is great, but how can this be even better? How can we, you know, take this to the next level and really surprise people?
Nice. That's pretty cool. So that's the part that you're interested in, or that's the thing that you like doing. But what would you say is your design superpower?
Well, I think I'm a people's person. So I think maybe my superpower is getting people together and really getting people to have a shared set of goals and be passionate about something. And I think this is so important, like driving the team to do whatever we have to do in a way that really engages everyone and everyone feels passionate about. And this is something that I like to do. I really like to inspire my team, inspire people. And I love storytelling. This is something that for me, it's like one of the topics that I've been passionate about. It's like, how can simplify something in a way that everyone will fall in love with it and everyone will empathize with what has been done, and you guys want to achieve that amazing goal. So yeah, I think that's a little bit my superpower, like getting people engaged. And it might sound like something very like simple, but it's not, and it's very difficult.
Yeah, I don't think it's simple at all. I think it's a very good superpower, and it makes you very unique, right? Because it's something that, you know, is challenging, and you have to drive it, and you have to want, and that you have to be that connector of the people. So it's really interesting. So I'm gonna give you my superpower. Is I can give you a time machine, and you can go back in time, and you can give any advice you want to Andrea when she was starting out. You can, you know, reach out to yourself and say like, hey, Andrea, you know, here's my advice to you. What would you give yourself as an advice?
Okay, I need some time to think about this one. My advice to myself when I was starting. Yeah, so I think the advice that I would give to myself is to not get distracted with things in your life. So for example, as I was saying, I was someone that I was very focused in my career, but at sometimes I was getting distracted with, you know, personal life or just being in your early 20s and things like this. And I really feel like I could have optimized my career a little bit more. So I could have achieved some things earlier on the process if I would put the energy into that. But at the same time, I think that's fine because I was just, you know, living life. I don't think life is all about work as well. So you have to balance. But yeah, I think not getting super sidetracked by some things at some points in your life and just focusing a little bit more.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. So have you felt that because you've lived in different countries, you know, and in different cities, even in Brazil, that you changed based on the culture of these places? And what kind of changes did you notice?
You mean in myself or in my design process? Or
in actually in both. It's a good point. It could be in yourself, it can be in the design process.
Yeah, I think myself, definitely. I think any time that you leave your comfort zone, you always change. Even if you live, you know, a city within your own country, you go to another city, there's like new experiences, new people, and that helps to shape how you think about things. You're always like opening up your mind. So I think I changed quite a lot. And most of this change is around being more open-minded to the differences that it's out there. Like there are so many different people with different pains, different struggles, backgrounds. And I think being able to see this and empathize with this and respect the differences, it's very important. And it was something that living abroad really helped me to do this. Like I have friends that I don't agree with a lot of their point of views, but there's something that connects us, you know, and that's why we remain friends. So I think it's important to be able to tolerate the differences. And when you think about how you can apply this to design, it's about creating that empathy with your users and you know, when you're designing, for example, not being so narrowed down to one use case and trying to think about other use cases from other people in different places in the world and so on. Because, you know, the way people drive a car in the US, not how people drive a car in Europe. It's not how they drive a car in Sydney. The way people watch TV in Brazil is different from how people watch TV in Japan. And the way people, you know, like they eat is different. And the fact that helps someone to, you know, book a trip, it's different from one region to the other one. So I think it's important to be very open to the different pains and not, yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah, it makes sense. And did you face any challenges during all these moves, culturally speaking? Something that caught you by surprise, something that you felt you had to adapt to?
Yeah. I think one thing that comes to my mind, it's in terms of like the working culture. I think being a woman in Brazil, at least when I was working there, I can't like speak for now, but during my time there, it was a little bit sexist, I would say, just because of our culture. And one thing that really shocked me when I moved to the Netherlands was that I felt that people would give me space to talk. Like I felt like during meetings, people would actually be quiet and wait for me to finish. So, you know, they could continue the conversation. So, and for me, that was very shocking. Like that was really intimidated. Like I didn't know how to react to that because for me, it was the very first time that I didn't have to be shouting during a meeting. I didn't have to, you know, be raising my hand. I would be like, okay, so I think this, and then people would actually listen, especially men. And they would listen, they would wait, they would respect, and they would hear what I was saying. And for me, that was something that was very new. But again, that's my experience. I can't speak for all the women out there. I really hope this is not their experience. But for me, that was the biggest shock, the level. But I think that also has to do with working within an international environment and in an international company, because there's people from different backgrounds, different religions, different countries, different everything. So I feel that people really respect each other. And this is great. This is amazing. This is something that I haven't experienced before. And I was like only working in my country.
Thanks for sharing that. And it sucks that you had to experience that only after you left your country. But I'm happy that you did. And that, you know, it wasn't as much as a challenge, but more of a something good that happened from the, you know, from the move. So I'm going to ask you, you know, if you have any advice for any Latinx designer out there, they're starting out or they're interested in moving outside of the country, anything you want to say to them, you know, to share your experience and to maybe help them do or not do the things you did, so they can, you know, progress in their career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess my advice would be, it's a long journey. I think nowadays, everyone is trying, there's so many people trying, you know, to break into design, and there's so many junior designers out there, people starting out or mid-level trying to, you know, make into big tags and whatnot. So the competition is really high. And I feel like if you really want to make it, or whatever is your concept of making it, but if you want to move abroad or, you know, have experience with a larger company, which is, it's not easy to make into, I feel like you need to focus a lot and not get sidetracked by things and, you know, just plan out your career. Have that self-awareness moment, like, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? When do I feel like I do my best work? What kind of projects do I really think I'm strong at? And try to optimize for this, right? Like, you have to optimize to whatever is your strength, not the opposite. And try to apply your strengths in whatever situation you're in as well. And you know, have self-awareness, be confident, and really focus and plan out your career and keep trying, keep doing it. And I guess that's it. Just study a lot. Study is very important, very important part of it.
Awesome. Wow. So that's a great advice. Plan your career, be self-aware, and, you know, focus on your strengths. That's really great. I love it. Well, Andrea, thank you a lot for taking the time to have this chat. I really enjoyed it. It was very nice. And I hope that everyone can listen to it and get a lot of your, you know, good advice and information here. Thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thank you. No, thank you so much. I hope this helps out people out there. And thanks for the invite.
Awesome. Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, I almost forgot. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe. Also, rate us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. Thank you.